This is Dave, the Scholarship Coach, with your daily scholarship for Saturday, March 30th. And I am joined once again by Dan Senowitz, also known as the College Dude. Dan, thanks for coming back on the show.
Absolutely, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Well, you are such a knowledgeable person when it comes to FAFSA and things like that. We wanted to have you back on the show because, of course, there were many changes to the FAFSA this time around. And it's been a little bit of a mess, at least from what I've seen.
Yep, that's accurate.
Yeah. So let's just real quick talk about what are some of the high level changes aside from the date that it opened, which was extremely late this time around. What are a few of the changes that happened with FAFSA this year?
Yeah, for sure. So to kind of go back to the way things were, you know, FAFSA had been for a long period of time, they used this specific formula to formulate what the kind of a starting point of what colleges and both the federal government would use to award aid. But the massive overhaul in this past, it was announced a few years ago, but now it's taking effect this year. But there are a couple big high level things that changed, which changed the way that the formula was calculated. So a couple big ones there, I think some positives and negatives, depending on, you know, the type of family that you have or the dynamics that you have. But one of the ones I think that would be positive is there are certain things that previously were counted as income, which no longer are. So for example, if you're contributing to a retirement plan at work, that's a pre-tax plan. On your tax return, it shows that you don't make that money that you contribute. But for financial aid purposes, that would have been added back in. So just a quick math example, if you had $100,000 of income, you contributed $5,000 to a 401k, it would show on paper that you made $95,000 that year as far as taxes were concerned. But for financial aid, that $5,000 would get added back in. So the new FAFSA kind of took that away. So they just said whatever is delineated on the tax return, that's what we go with. So that's a positive change.
Yeah.
Another positive one is 529 plans from parents. Previously, that would have been added back in. That could have really thrown off some aid from both the government side, but also for the, you know, what the college would award as well. But there are also some negatives. I think some of the high level ones there. Big one is some of the way that the assets are counted. So, for example, there was a small business exclusion. So if you had under 100 employees and your asset of the small business was valued at, you know, whatever that would be, previously you wouldn't have to include that on the FAFSA. But now moving forward, you do have to include that as an asset on the on the FAFSA. Same with farms. That's another thing that was a big change. But a big one that's going to affect a certain segment of the population is also what was previously known as the multiple student discount. If you had more than one child in college at the same time, the expected family contribution, as it was previously known, was split in half. So in other words, it would offer a pretty significant benefit. But with the changes, that's one of the big ones that has gone away and has affected a lot of families.
Yeah, that is one that I really wanted to kind of drill down with you on. Most of the families I work with do have multiple students, either in high school or college age or combination of both. So I guess what does that look like? Are you saying that it used to be that they would take into account how many students a family had in college in a particular school year and their eligibility would be divided by those number of students, or how did it used to work and how does that look now?
Yeah, you pretty much got it exactly right. So the way that it would work, just to use again an example, is, you know, they would take the four different factors that go into calculating your number, which was previously the EFC or expected family contribution. Now it's known as the SAI or student aid index, but for all intents and purposes, the number is the same thing, or it serves the same role. But on the EFC, if you had two children in school, and let's say your number was 40,000 for your family, if you had two children in school, that would split 20,000 for child one, 20,000 for child two. So the reason why that's important is that 20,000 number usually is something that's both based on the government aid that you'd be available for, but also for some colleges, they use that to award their institutional aid. So a lower EFC would have meant the potential for more aid, whether that come through this form of scholarships or, again, through the government, there could be grants or loans. That's something that would be eligible through the school. But with the change that took place with the student aid index now, if you have two children in that same scenario, $40,000, it's 40,000 for child one and 40,000 for child two, thus meaning less aid available. So that's what caused, it was a pretty significant change that took place.
So basically, to, you know, my experience with this with my son, it goes back to the ESC days. So that number, use your example of 40,000, what FAFSA was saying is your expected family contribution, what we expect you should be able to pay, is 40,000 per year for your student.
Mm-hmm.
Does the student aid index mean that exact same thing? So if somebody's student aid index came back with a 40,000 number, is that what they're saying they're expected to pay? Or is it almost the opposite now, where that's what we think you should get in financial aid?
It's a great question. And it's part of the reason, it's one of, in my opinion, a positive change that took place is, I think the terminology was misleading. Expected family contribution typically meant that they expect, it's a government number, to be very clear.
Yep.
But that number is what a lot of, I think, people expected to pay, but they found out when they went through the process, it wasn't necessarily jiving.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, for some students only apply to one school, they get in, and that's the way that they go. But for I think the majority of others, when they apply to a number of different schools, they could find they're getting a number of different packages, you know, some, you know, that are going to offer more or less in terms of aid. And some schools are more generous in offering aid than others. So it's a complicated process, but that number, that EFC number, is kind of considered the starting point. It really, to answer your question, it doesn't so much change in terms of, again, the purpose of it. What I think really changes is the way that it's calculated, but also moving forward, I do think it's something that's going to benefit families of, I'll say, lesser means, that come from families of a lesser means or background of such. And that way, it's going to offer more aid from the government that you'd be eligible for. So Pell Grant eligibility, for example, is something that's been increased. Whereas, you know, what the school will offer, that's still kind of to be seen. You know, there, you know, some schools are going to offer grants and scholarships, again, directly through their institutional aid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't say that I've really seen major changes across the board, but certainly from an individual school basis, they're going to look at these numbers, and their ultimate goal is to get children, you know, or students, I should say, to end up enrolling. And in order to do that, they have to offer the right package while also still making sure their bottom line isn't really taking a big hit there too.
Yeah.
So it's a change for a lot of people, for parents, but also I think for schools as well, we're seeing.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it too late for us, for families who have a student in the high school class of 2024, so graduating high school seniors, mm-hmm. is it too late for them to do anything in their financial background to affect the FAFSA now?
You know, in terms of, it's a good question. For some, if they've already completed the FAFSA, more or less that answer would be yes. For others, there could be a chance where, if you have sizable assets and, you know, you have upcoming expenses that you're looking to take. So, for example, if you have a sizable savings account, but you have, a new car that you want to purchase, you have other large expenses that you would want to do. Cars, for example, are not something that would be disclosed as an asset on the FAFSA. So in theory, if you needed to buy that car, you could do it. Now, you know, before anybody goes and does that, what I want to be clear on is, you also want to run the calculation of, is this going to actually have a significant effect for your benefits? Right. Certainly don't do this. Don't cut off your nose to spite your face is the term I would use. If you're going to kind of go along the route of looking to make a purchase because you have a sizable savings account or whatever that would be, make sure you're doing it for the right reason. So it's those types of things that if you haven't yet completed the FAFSA that you could look to do. But again, you know, you have to ask the question of how significant of a change is this going to make. But I definitely think in addition to the FAFSA, there are some things that you can look for to help, you know, lower the net cost of college, which is ultimately what I think everybody's after. But in terms of things like some tax planning items that are out there, there are definitely some accounts that you could look to utilize that could help with that. Depending on your state of residence, you know, some 529 plans allow for a tax break if you contribute There's also some things you can look to do at the federal level. If your modified adjusted gross income is at or near $160,000, you know, you can qualify for a great tax credit in there too that you'd be eligible for. And that's on a per student basis. So if you have multiple students, that's one way I highly recommend parents try to take advantage of, because if the schools or the federal government is going to be raising the price of what the net cost of college will be, you got to try and take advantage to offset that in other ways. So tax planning is usually one, a good area to look for.
That's great advice. So one of the other things that you do is work with families around student loan planning. Can you tell us a little bit about what that even means? You know, some people, myself included, thought that student loans are student loans, and you get what you get and you pay what you pay, and there's nothing you can do. So it sounds like there's a little more to it than that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first off, just to be very clear, I definitely advocate the way both you and your son have gone about it. I definitely think that's it's not insignificant work. I mean, you got to be doing the work to find the scholarships and go that route. So to me, that is a number one. Very clear. I just want to articulate that from the jump. But it's not, you know, not every family is going to be able to go through college without some semblance of student loans. Mm-hmm. So something that's been taking place within the last several years, really in the last couple of years, is the student loan landscape has significantly changed as well. You feel like if you're looking at headlines, there's forgiveness options this day, there's something else happening that day. So the landscape is constantly changing. But what I think is very important to understand is we often, I think, as a society, view debt as kind of really more or less kind of the same thing. So a mortgage, credit card debt, car loan, these are things that if you take it out, you got to pay it back. And if you don't pay it back, you could be repossessed on the asset that you have, whatever it would be. But student loans are a lot different. And there are, I think, two major things that allow for differences there. If one of them, or just to, again, kind of start off by saying, it's most of these student loans are going to be through the government, through the federal direct program. There are also private loans that are out there, which do tend to be a little bit more like your standard types of loans and debt. But for those through the federal direct system, they offer what are known as income-driven repayment plans. So depending on the type of job that you have out of school, excuse me, if you're not earning a high income, but you expect to earn a high income at some point, or if you have a very high balance coming out of grad school, but you just don't have a job right away, there are plans that you can look for to make sure that there's relief that's available for those that aren't able to capture that. So there are some things that I think folks can look to do. Another big one is parents often finding themselves behind the eight ball with what are known as parent plus loans. Mm-hmm. You know, for some, they can make sense, but for others, they can really put a boon on retirement and delay or make retirement very, very difficult, certainly a lot different than what they expect. So I often try to caution parents that if you're going to go the parent plus route, know before you go what this means. But if they do have parent plus loans, there are certainly some strategies that they can look to utilize to make sure that they're able to retire on their own terms, but also do so in a way that's responsible.
Yep. Yeah. That advice is something that I do hear a lot of financial people like yourself saying is you need to think about your retirement in addition to how you're helping your kid pay for college. Because as one of my last guests pointed out, there's no such thing as a retirement loan. There are student loans, but no retirement loans.
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, I definitely think, you know, people have, and that's what we found is there's no, everybody has different goals and different priorities in which they want to measure. And for some people, sending their children to college is more important than retiring. And, you know, I certainly, my goal at the end of the day is to help people the best that I can and help them achieve their goals. As long as they're realistic, we certainly do our best to help them achieve that. But every one of us have different values. And for some, they can say, you know what, junior's on his own. I don't need to help at all. I'm focused on, I want to be at the beach, you know, at age 60. So you figure it out. But, you know, not everybody is that way. And I think, again, what we want to try to do is make sure that the plan just makes sense with the strategies that are being utilized. Right. And again, with an ever-changing landscape with the student loan side and folks that have different competing views, there is no one-size-fits-all answer. But I can definitely give you a further validation that there is no loan for retirement. And I think that's something that if it's important to families, you got to make sure you're planning accordingly for it.
Right, right. Exactly. Well, one other question about student loans. And if this is too far out of left field, just let me know and
go
we'll
ahead.
Cut this yeah. out. But so a private lending company, Discover mm-hmm. Financial Services, I guess.
Yep.
They offered a scholarship sweepstakes ever since I've known, and they just stopped offering that. Do you think that means something in the world of student loans that a big organization like Discover says this is no longer a viable business for us?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's something that without knowing the specific reason, it's hard to really to come up with a specific answer, but what I can say is I think it's you know, student loans, I think they've reached crisis level, if you ask
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's definitely the whole political side of it, you know, talking about some forgiveness that we can offer or some not. Like, there are legitimate arguments, I think, on both sides that you know, have been made, but what everybody I think can agree on is that the cost of college and going to college right now is really, it's unsustainable. I think mm-hmm. finding the right mix of both and trying to find a way to go to college, but also make sure that you're paying your a fair amount. It's incumbent on the parents and it's incumbent on the student to make sure they're doing that. So to me, I think if an organization is going to be looking to get out of it, I mean, Discover Student Loans has been, they are, you know, kind of one of the standard bearers, I think, for a long time in the private student loan space. But
mm-hmm.
I just think it's something that we're seeing in our society where it's kind of an expectation that college is going to just be there. And without proper planning, I think it's, you could find yourself in a very unfortunate situation, whether that's yeah. on the parent side or on the student side. Mm-hmm. And no parent wants that for their children. And yet we're entrusting 16, 17, 18 year olds that are kind of on their way to try to make this decision. And I think without a reality check, it can be a little hard sometimes. So to answer your question specifically, I don't know exactly what to make of it, but I do think it does speak to a much broader message, which is student loans are not going anywhere, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And they're going to continue to be a problem, I think, for society and for our country at large.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Well, Dan, this has been fantastic. Lots of great information for people who are looking for help planning. Like you said,
yeah.
planning is really the key.
Yeah.
How can they get in touch with you, and what kinds of things do you do with your clients?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you asking. And again, as always, thank you, Dave. This is great. But yeah, I mean, really what I think we try to do is help parents on two ends. Either it is on the front end, which is going to college and coming up with a plan, a budget to understand how much they can afford and which schools are likely to offer the best fit. Mm-hmm. And then on the back end too, if you see parents or if parents have come across situations where they have loans, and again, they have that competing interest of parent plus loans versus retirement, we do our best to try to make sure that we help folks manage through properly to both the student loan repayments and then also the retirement side. But we do also offer financial planning kind of in a larger scope with that as well. I mean, loans and college is just one part usually of a much greater financial plan. So we kind of offer the gamut of that. But the best place that folks can find me is www.thecollegedude.com. And they can kind of just get a peek on some of the content that's been put out there on our end. We also have a YouTube channel. At the College Dude is that where you can find us. So, you know, a lot of the information that we try and put out there is just geared towards families that are struggling to either find to pay for schooling, or if they've, you know, like I said, found themselves in an unfortunate predicament, trying to do our best to plan our way out of it. So, but yeah, as always, Dave, no, really do appreciate you having me on, and it's some great stuff here.
Oh, thanks, Dan. Yeah, always love having you on, and appreciate all that you're doing as well. You provide valuable services and information, so we're
Thank you.
Very glad to have you on.
Likewise.
Yeah. I'll put links in the show notes for your website and your YouTube channel, which, by the way, awesome. I will say is fantastic. I love watching your videos.
You.
Always informative and entertaining.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on, and look forward to having you on again sometime again in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Dave.